we can formally kick off the meeting, but I just wanted to go over that very quickly before we started.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Thanks for those resources, too. So we've got Karen on as well. Thanks, Karen, for joining early on a Monday morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I think, yeah, we can take a chance to review those. But Duff, I know you sent some resources as well, and we can get those out to folks. And then I know prior to our whole meeting 2 weeks ago, you had some thoughts, and I just wanted to, maybe that's a good starting place, to just hear from you for a minute on kind of what are you thinking about when it comes to this topic, and how can we best kind of review what you've been able to pull together in terms of resources and do something with them?
Sure, I appreciate that, Nils. Michael, could you do me the favor of pulling up the tasks sheet for the Incentives and Subsidies Committee? Because I gave a little, go back up to the top where I started, and I'll run through this a little bit, the state of Alaska. So, you know, I feel that, you know, Alaska, if you take an evaluation, and I think it's really good that we're looking at other states and other jurisdictions of what they're doing. But I also know that we do great work with incentives of where we try to create good behaviors and subsidies, and I think that's the carrot approach. I think that there's a lot of, when I attended the Alaska Energy Security Conference that the governor put on May, I was impressed at all the private jets that were at the Anchorage Airport looking at investments in Alaska. I didn't know Goldman Sachs still had a family member running at Michael Sachs, but there's a huge appetite for private investment being attracted to help us help ourselves. And in discussions with behind in doors and behind on breaks and whatever, you know, we have a lot of tax incentives for the oil industry. We have zero for integration of renewables or how we could invest in transmission in other generations. So in the first two tax incentives, statewide property tax and statewide income tax, I'm just raising the issue of what could be weighed for the public benefit to help us lower costs of power. Every tax is a pancake on the cost of power. So if you lower the cost of taxes, you're actually lowering the cost of energy. Attracting capital with lower tax also allows you to get better financing, better interest rates, and other things. So it has a second and third order impact as well. So with just those, I can stop there if there was any questions anyone had on. I think that's kind of self-explanatory where those two are, but I'm willing to, you know, if there's any more questions or thoughts on those two items.
Yeah. Beth, shouldn't we have a statewide property tax first before we exempt it?
Well,
we have local property taxes, so you're suggesting that for where there's a local property tax, then that there should be a tax incentive there.
Correct. And Nils, I know you represent the municipal folks, and the municipal folks would say, "Hey, you're stepping in my territory. I got it. I'm not going to polish this." But what I'm thinking is that we do have jurisdictions that have property tax. I'm not saying exempting current. I'm saying how do we enable and grow distribution? If you're going to put electric vehicles into condominiums, you're going to have to improve your transmission and or distribution. Co-ops are already exempt. However, private is not. And so if you have a private, let's say it's a native corporation, wants to put a 5-megawatt solar out someplace, this could help them in their tax schemes or how they engage. So I'm thinking that this needs to be statewide to incentivize. But yeah, that's the clarity on that. I'm not saying that it's not, somebody won't ask questions about it.
No, I'm just, playing a little bit. The way that the state, where it's had, like, if the state were to require, for instance, a property tax exemption at the local level for this new, incentive, you know, the way it's structured that in the past is through a reimbursement process, but then it doesn't fund it. So I think there's a general kind of concern about any state-led effort that doesn't end up being decided at the local level. Those are the problems with it. The way to, probably try to move it forward is draft out, like, what would that need to look like? What are we specifically targeting? And you've got new generation and transmission. So, fleshing that out would probably help local governments understand here's how they could make a difference.
And I appreciate that, but I'll flip this around the telescope around the other end. I'm looking at the big picture. The details are going to need to be worked out with the legislature and as this process. I don't want to micromanage the initiative at this point, but I will say something. If there is a new transmission and a new generation created, there was no tax revenue originally until this created. So it's not taking away or eating anyone's lunch. It's just value adding toward the lower cost power of the state. So I'm not advocating, hey, we do this. One of the things, and I'll just give you an insight, Nils, is that there is large private monies looking at how, if, and where could there be an RTO or some kind of transmission development. Well, if you have to do a rail belt RTO and it's through multiple jurisdictions and multiple boroughs and multiple whatever, it's hairy, you know, as far as the tax thing. So I'm not only looking for the little micro things, but it could affect how we invigorate private capital to help us, because we just don't have the billions of dollars for transmission. And I'm just trying to track it.
Yeah.
So, if I may, it sounds like there might be further study needed related to this too. And I'm wondering if this is wordsmithing the action, maybe, you know, physical impact analysis to that property tax exemption. But I defer.
Yeah. Potentially. Yeah. I mean, I think if we want it to be, it depends on how far we go. I mean, action worksheet, you know, has like implementation time frame, who's doing what, et cetera. So we might need to kind of spell out here's the steps necessary to achieve, you know, the goal from, you know, this recommended action. Who's got a property tax? You know, who would this apply to? Kind of likely scenarios. What would be meaningful, like when would private capital respond to an incentive and when would it not? What is the value of that exemption need to look like? And then what would be the impact on the, you know, foregone revenue at the local level? And where we have to remember, like, when you forego revenue, it doesn't mean you reduce your budget. You just add that cost elsewhere, and so it would fall on, I mean, it would fall on your full value determination, and you'd have to, anyways, there's like steps we would have to implement as part of evaluating the, how that would be implemented, Michael.
So,
but that gets into the weeds pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
Just to kind of follow on to that, my question would be is, do we have examples of municipalities that have done this type of thing already, you know, to attract certain types of capital?
Yes. I think Kenai and did a property tax exemption for their solar operation, and I think that there was some And I have to defer because I don't have the facts. I don't know if the solar exemption out there in Palmer, Wasilla got something. So there is examples that's already being incubated. But that being said, there is incentives in other states. I don't want to micro research and get into the weeds at this point. I am sitting on the task force with bigger items and recommendations for an energy plan. I believe that the implementation steps and how that is credibly worked through the process isn't going to be determined by this subcommittee or even the task force. It's going to be, a recommendation or something that goes forward, and it will be, it will go through the ropes of the legislature and others. And so, I think there is examples, though, to specific, Mark, of what's already occurred in Alaska.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Doug. Or Isaac, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, just wordsmithing this a little bit, one way to maybe change the proposal rather than a statewide tax exemption, which, as you said, Duff, the municipalities might balk at, is saying something like treat renewable energy development the same way we treat utilities throughout the state. Because that is what we do with utilities. We give them a property tax exemption. And so maybe that's a way to frame it differently.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't want to get it lost in the thing of attracting the private capital. I mean, I think 86% of our utilities are muni and or co-ops. They're already tax exempt. However, I'm trying to take what I learned from the energy conference that the governor's had, and I'm trying to bring in and attract private capital. And we all know tax is a pancake on the cost of power. And if our pure focus mission is lowering the cost of power, I'm good with how it gets wordsmithed. But I think that it's I think the effort or the goal of it is, regardless of how it's worded, it should be at least discussed.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's a top priority item is to provide a tax exemption. It's just trying to frame it in a way that doesn't get into political fights or into people feeling like we're trying to force something through the municipalities from the state level. But yeah, I agree. The goal is the same, and I do think it's super important. I think this tax exemption for is super critical. So yeah. Hey, one other thing that maybe aligns with that, which I don't know if it's on our list, and I am having trouble again finding our SharePoint file again this morning, but I'll look for it after the meeting, is a postage stamp rate for integration tariffs in the state would be really interesting to explore, so that we have a single rate that renewable developers can rely on, and it doesn't have to be haggled over each time that there's a project proposed, either on the Rail Belt or elsewhere. It's something that I think, again, could go towards attracting private investment to know what their integration chart is going to be.
Isaac, just one point of information really quick. The email I sent earlier this morning should have a link to the worksheet.
Oh, it's in there. Okay, thanks.
Sure. Yeah, I agree, Isaac. I just wanted to go back to, is there any further questions on the tax incentives for the state income tax or any of the other things I did before, just going back to what Neil's requested. I just want to make sure I'm throwing it out and people have the ability to ask questions. I would like to quickly move to the liability subsidy for transmission. We all know that Hawaii Electric could go bankrupt. Pacific Gas and Electric did go bankrupt due to forest fires or fires that impacted utilities. Now, I'm not one to remove liability for negligence, but I will dare say that if there is a forest fire and 800 homes get burned from somebody's power line and they go bankrupt, or they have liability issues, it pulls the entire Rail Belt down or everyone that's connected to them, since we don't have an RTO. So I'm just saying, I think this issue should be opened up. I will go back to something you raised, Isaac. I think in return for the public benefit of some kind of liability protection, that we need to have open access in this state. And you were talking about a postage stamp rate for integration costs. Right now we have not a clear, defined, open access for everybody to play on the same playing field in Alaska. We have FERC Rule 888 and we have FERC Rule 889, which is not only the law of the land for open access, but ERCOT and Hawaii have, who are the other two jurisdictions that haven't, aren't under FERC jurisdiction, abide by those rules. And so we have, you know, what I'm saying is utilities don't like open access. They would prefer to have, you know, their little deal of what open access means, but there is a federal definition. Again, I'm not trying to wade into controversies, but I'm trying to provide an incentive and a subsidy for helping us lower the cost of power so that, and you mentioned it, open access is an integration cost. So that's just a little background on that.
And a couple questions, comments. So one, just on the income tax exemption, we did during our meeting as a subcommittee during while the whole group met, I think we flagged that as you know, an easy kind of top five list of things to recommend. I don't know about easy, but it made, you know, sense since it is something the state does control, at least on the, you know, the corporate tax side. And for the liability subsidy, I wonder, you know, we've been talking about, you know, differently than energy, but about a presumption trust, because there's related to liability for workers' comp issues at the state level. And I wonder if, because often what the state does is either say, oh, there's no liability here, or somebody's responsible for it, or they offer, or they require a subsidy that maybe is not funded then. But what if there was a trust of some sort that could be capitalized, and then each of the utilities or whoever could access that in the event of something like this? Would that, is that different than a subsidy? And, or, I mean, is it, does it help on some front if it could be capitalized?
I think that is, I think that is a variation of this.
Okay.
An insurance pooling is a reduction of the liability. Right. Utilities have exposure. I mean, some utilities, frankly, are better than others at the roadside management and brushing and other things. But even if you are in the perfect world and you completely fund all that, you still have liabilities, and we are a state that's, I mean, look at British Columbia. I mean, there's thousands of people now that have left their homes. They live in somewhat of a similar nature that we do. I'm game for whether it's an insurance pooling liability or some kind of way to, I don't want to just say, oh, you don't have liability, and then we push it off that those damages or those things aren't funded, but how that's created, I think it's an issue that needs to be resolved if we're going to further transmission.
Yeah. I like the pooling idea. I mean, not just on the liability, but I know property insurance is going up 20, 30, 50, 100% or something, which is probably impacting utilities as well. So maybe we could think more broadly about what are investments on that side that bring down liabilities and that exposure overall to assist with that. And then my third thing, just in terms of private capital, maybe it would be worth having private capital come and present to this group. I don't know about like an Alaska Growth Capital, or I'm sure, Isaac, you've got a list of, but having them come and talk to us about here's what would make a difference for us in this space. Is that, or what kind of message would we get back, Isaac?
Yeah, I think, you know, the group that funded the Houston solar development, Clean Capital, would love to come chat. And they do this periodically. They have a whole kind of policy side of what they do that helps state legislatures think through problems related to attracting, theirs is very much focused on solar, but how to help states attract private capital. So easy to get John Powers, who's the CEO, to come for that.
Okay. All right. PT, Hugh Short is PT Capital, maybe doing Northern Arctic region investments. I don't know. I would love to hear, their side and, what makes a difference for them.
Yeah. Well, I know that Andrew, I'll just say, I know that Andrew isn't on, but there's probably a Rolodex of some private folks that would also be interested if they wouldn't want to come on personally, but they may want to come on Zoom or provide a paper of what opportunities they see of private capital coming into Alaska that were from the last conference the governor had.
Yeah, and I would just note that we want to make sure that it's folks that have done investments in these kinds of projects. The reason I didn't immediately go to some of our local capital providers is that not many of them have done like tax equity debt investments right. in renewable projects. So since we're trying to create something new here that doesn't exist, we might unfortunately have to find some folks outside the state who've invested in these projects. But yeah, I'm happy to reach out to Andrew and or just ask some folks what you know.
Right.
Nils, on the streamlining and prioritization, you got any questions on that? I have examples. I mean, there's an example where someone has tried to lease state land for hydropower, and it's going on 17 years. The costs have tripled since they applied for state land to develop hydro, which, you know, we like to throw bombs at the federal, saying they're so slow on permitting, but 17 years is pretty much a retirement generation of an employee.
Right. No, and I think there'll be a lot of overlap with that in the statutory regulatory subcommittee, and we have talked about meeting with them at some point. I think, Michael, you mentioned, I don't know, that it's been a topic of conversation, so maybe we could bring that up with them too. But we need to bring it back to what's the financial impact of no action and what are the benefits that would come, financial benefits that come from that streamlining. And what, what are the specific components? Is it permitting? Is it surveying? Is it access to land? Is it, what are those kind of base levels of things that we're trying to solve for? And beyond just kind of the streamlining piece, are there specific elements that we could pick up and try to improve?
Well, I think it's all of the above. I also think that the people at AEA who have worked with the Renewable Energy Fund, where they're working with folks trying to get permitting and whatever, could provide, lessons learned or where could be some specific suggestions. Again, I'll just go to my high-level suggestion. I think it's important that we walk the walk because we're always asking the state to do this or the feds to do this and do this, but we also need to have some self-reflection of how we could do things better and help enable good projects going forward.
I appreciate it.
Good.
Yeah.
On the federal side, I just want to throw out the RSU 477 and 4407 for folks that don't know much about those. I know Mark Lucan knows them well. RSU 477s are created by like an 1800s law. If you had a Pony Express trail or a Native Trading trail or you had some kind of mining mule trail, those are in essence is an RS-2477. If you look at some Supreme Court and some other court cases, states are supposed to have supremacy or have argued supremacy over those. The state of Alaska DNR has documented those really, really well. And I think that that is something we need to still push for, because it not only affects transmission lines, but it affects roads. 4407 rights away are from the Don Young map 99, I can't remember the number, that we traded rights to the Forest Service for log transfer facilities to allow roads and transmission lines specifically in the Tongass Forest. And so I think this is a state's rights issue. It dovetails nicely with the reduction in cost of power, because if you can use these right-of-ways, it's a lot easier for permitting and for motivating investments into transmission lines all over the state. And I think it's a future planning thing. So anyways, that's that in a nutshell.
Yeah, and we've got precedents as a state on the 4407 with some of the road. I think the Cake Access Road was one that that we ultimately used that right away to build that road. And so again, that's a, you know, we can, it ends up, you know, starting as a battle with the Forest Service, but, you know, like I said, we've got precedent now, so it did make it a little bit more less of a conflict, I guess, to exercise that.
And the way I look at this, Mark, is that if we flag it, this has also become something for our Alaska congressional delegation to work with appropriation schedules, with authorization schedules, with different departments, and or working with other states that have similar issues. I'm not going to say we're going to snap our fingers and get this resolved overnight, but it is a long-term, and it is, well, it's not only a long-term, it's a short-term issue if you're dealing with a transmission line in a local community like a Cake, or like the other precedent, which is in Ketchikan, where there was an argument of can you go 60 feet from the center line or not, or is it just a general indication of a right-of-way. So I just wanted to flag that just for the subcommittee situational awareness, and I'm bringing it forward.
Yeah.
Renewable land use designations, the Forest Service, for those of you who haven't been involved with dealing with the Chugach and Tongass, they basically come up with a zoning, a community zoning. And interestingly enough, there's very restrictive zoning. And they used to have transportation and utility corridors or land use designations. And over the last 10 years, they've removed those, so it makes it even more onerous to develop renewable energy and transmission line corridors on federal lands. So I just, again, flagging that I think the state can input and say, hey, we need to have renewable energy and transmission line use designation as an overlaying land use designation. In the past, what they said, if you have a transmission and you have a renewable energy project, you can overlay on a very restrictive old growth forest, or you can overlay on a remote recreational, which if you go down the little synopsis of their bullets, is that says no development. And so I'm just bringing this out because this affects anybody that's trying to develop resources on federal lands. And I do say that I'm more familiar with the Forest Service, but I'm sure Department of Interior has similar restrictions for those parts of the state that are on DOI lands.
It sounds like, Jeff, I'll just, I brought up earlier the statutory regulatory group, but I think we should commend to them these items, that the streamlining RS-2477 for wetland permitting, those would be good for them to pick up, and maybe they can advise us on financial or incentive subsidy impacts. It might be the same for even the Line 19, the renewable energy development on federal lands.
But I want to jump to one thing, and I share that with you, that there's overlap. Yeah. But just like you're going to find overlap with the coastal and the rail belt and with the, you know, I'm not going to get locked into a box of the top five. I won't go there. Because if there's seven or eight that are really good, you know, so I don't want us to go through a clearinghouse on any idea, because a plan needs to have
lots of ideas.
Yeah, and I think at our level, this is the high level. We're not into the micro weeds of how it gets executed. But I do share with you that there's incentives and subsidies overlap with the others. So I just share that because there is it's not one silo versus another in my mind. But you're the chair, so I'll let you and Isaac defer to that. But I'm just giving you my two cents. Number 20 is definitely under subsidies and incentives. Create a federal Alaska Renewable Energy and Transmission Line Fund. I have researched, and Wyoming and North Dakota have the same populations generally of Alaska. Two times the amount of transmission line. Puerto Rico has a multi-billion dollar fund. I was at an NHA meeting this January or earlier this year, and there's discussion of giving Puerto Rico a DC line from Florida to Puerto Rico, multi-billion dollars, so that they can be on renewable energy. I want to take nothing away from Puerto Rico. They're a territory. They're 135 miles long, 35 miles wide island with 3.2 million people. And they have twice as much transmission line than the whole state of Alaska. Now, I've shared this with Senator Sullivan, who likes these statistics, you know, because he likes to talk about how Rhode Island and Connecticut have more road than Alaska, you know, and we're a state that needs to be developed. So I think that with us, AESTF, the governor's office, and making a push that, look, we have second world transmission. There's no doubt about it. I'm also going to put another overlay on here. We have national security at stake. We're the only state, I believe, with 9 military installations. And so it's a national security to have redundancy of transmission. I was talking to the executive, John Burns, executive director of Golden Valley, and he says, you know, we haven't added the national security overlay to how we should be requesting funding for transmission lines and security. So I just throw that out there. On the next one, State of Alaska, primacy.
Just on that one, I was excited about that one. I get excited about a lot of things. So is this federal government establishes a $5 billion fund for renewable energy and transmission line development in Alaska. Is it a grant fund? Is it a loan fund? Is there a match? Is it for projects? Or does it include maintenance and operation? Like, what is there? And then, is there something similar that we could? You mentioned Wyoming, maybe somebody else has this funded at the federal level. Tell me more.
Yeah, sure. A couple things. Wyoming and North Dakota, I don't know what they have for funding. I know what Puerto Rico has. Okay. Puerto Rico said we're going to be 100% renewable by 2050. Congress went out and then said, how can we help you?
Okay.
They didn't.
So we need to look at Puerto Rico's.
Part of it was that they got their transmission and generation kind of got wiped out with a hurricane. So there was also the sympathy.
I can arrange that. We could figure that out probably.
Well, you know, we had a 64 earthquake and nobody came in and rebuilt all of our stuff. But we also had a much lower population then. My point is that I think that there's a need for federal investments based on the sheer numbers. I mean, we have 1,697 miles of transmission line, and Puerto Rico has over 3,200. There's a demand if we're not going to be considered a second world location for energy security and energy. if you don't have a transmission line, you can't interject your renewables into it. So, but then you go into the next level, which is how or what or the parameters thereof. I don't think at our level can decide that at the federal level. I know that DOE is kissing wherever they can Puerto Rico. I know USDA is kissing wherever they can for Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico gets extra points under rural utility service loans. Why isn't Alaska the same thing? So what I guess I'm saying is I don't want to micromanage the incentives the federal government could do or say, hey, it needs to be a $5 billion fund when it could be a $7 billion with maybe there's a corpus of a fund with a bunch of other incentives that go along with it. What I'm trying to establish here is in this initiative that this is the beginning steps of creating something that is going to help us with something of a fund. I think it's also incumbent upon us to work with our congressional delegation to start drafting up the bills, to start looking at what is the world of the possible. So I haven't gone into what that would look like or how North Dakota does it or how others do it, because I think we're on the innovative edge, because if you go to North Dakota or Rhode Island, they're going to say, hey, we've been building transmission lines since the advent of electricity in 1906 or wherever we started building transmission lines in our state. And those 1906 transmission lines and right-of-ways are still adjudicated, and they're operating now in 2023.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
That's great. You mentioned, Puerto Rico set this goal of 100% renewable by 2050, and then all this money came in. I'm curious to get your thoughts on renewable portfolio standard or clean energy standard for the state. If that's something I know we have a kind of non-binding goal as a state right now. But what are your thoughts about ways to have some kind of a binding goal for the state?
Well, again, I'm not elected official, but I do know that there's a difference between aspirational and directional. And aspirational means that you only need to do it when you really, really have either collaboration of all parties or you have collaboration of the key party, where a directional strategy is a little more binding. It also gives the RCA a little bit more binding to execute. I remember when the last state energy plan came forward and I was testifying in front of an RCA, and I'm not going to mention the commissioner, but he said, but if the legislature wanted us to do that, they would have directed. And my response was, well, who were they directing? Fish and Game? I was a little flippant, but basically I was arguing for that we needed to integrate the energy plan that we last had in a more directional basis. So I'm just sharing my personal opinions on it, but I don't want to get that in the way of our work. That's just Duff's opinion.
There's renewable portfolio standards out there. Is there anything like an affordable energy standard? Could the state set an affordability standard of some sort, and either at a price per kilowatt hour or a percentage of household income or something like that, and then create its incentivized incentive structure to like tiers of where that's being met or something? Is that, I Googled affordable energy standard and nothing comes up, so maybe nobody else has done this, but Isaac, any thoughts on that?
I have never heard of a affordable energy standard. That does not mean it doesn't exist. I know that in other jurisdictions where FERC, is regulating our utility rates, you have to go with the kind of lowest cost source of generation, and you have to, that's part of what FERC does, is forces regions to accept lower cost sources of generation. We do not have that here, but that is a kind of variation of what you're suggesting, Nils. It's an interesting idea. I'd love to look into that more, though. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, Nils, I kind of like that too. I would just say that I have found that Alaska is uniquely, and we can't always use everyone else's examples, but we kind of have to forge our own path to make it fit for us. Because what fits for Rhode Island or what fits for Puerto Rico may not necessarily, we may have lessons learned from it, but it may not be applicable. I will dare say I'm not a proponent of renewable energy to raise costs. And I've seen projects that actually are higher than diesel, or they just offset diesel, but there is no economic. But I also have seen projects that are good killed because someone says it's not affordable. It's not affordable in the next 3 months, and it's not affordable in the next 24 months, but at year 5 and 10, the life cycle, it radically reduces. For example, hydropower is expensive up front. There's nothing cheaper in the state than old hydropower. Snettisham is at 3 cents. Bradley's at 6 cents. I'm rounding numbers. The Four Dam Pool is at 6 cents. Dare find me any cheaper power. But on the day that it was executed in Snettisham, it was actually more expensive than diesel. Now those people look like they were really, really wise for investing or getting the federal government to invest in Snettisham. So I agree with you, the affordability, the devil in the details is it affordable right now here today, or is it affordable with the life cycle? But I like your idea of what is the affordability dynamic with an RPS.
Yeah. Jeff, in terms of that life cycle, this came up a few times and how we approach that. I mean, for the Snettisham, I mean, for a hydro project, is there any way to smooth that out? Like if there was, you know, a fund in place to do the upfront capitalization instead of charging, you know, 50 cents kilowatt hour the first year and 3 cents 20 years later, could you do 10 cents over that time, or is that just not how those projects work? Or how do you anticipate or describe that, or otherwise, I mean, if we were, yeah, any?
Well, it's the term of it and the interest rate. It's just like buying a house. You know, if you have a 100-year asset like hydropower is generally a 100-year asset, but FERC will give you a license between 30 and 50 years. But most of the hydropower in this country, I think the average age is 86. Okay, it's really high. So it's a very long term. If there is something where you could extend the term to a 50-year note, yes, you could, or let's say you got traditional financing from USDA and USDOE, but the state said, hey, we're going to help you with a 20 extension here so you could lower the cash flow requirements that are required out of the energy for today. I think that there's room to do that. It's an interesting thing, and I don't want to take up the committee's time, but I think that there is things that could be along that to help those longer-term investments spread down the cost over time so that it's not a rate shock or it's not unaffordable on day one.
Yep.
Gosh, and yeah, if you just had a 0% interest loan and you're just using that essentially to attract private capital, that in its own way is going to bring down the kind of cost of these projects and should, you know, bring down the rate that the ratepayers pay. I mean, a 0% or even like a 4 or 4.5% loan facility in Alaska would make so many of these projects be in the money that wouldn't be in the money otherwise. So yeah, I think that's the point I'm making also.
Isaac, did I bring up this, maybe we've talked about this before, having a revolving loan fund, half cent, percentage rate, on its interest. Washington, has one for transportation projects. But basically that loan facility would help to address that, that question. So maybe we should just make sure that's on our action worksheet, some sort.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, but I see 10 or 15 recommendations coming out here where they get flushed out later. I know Bill's, we're at that magic five, and some of these are going to overlap. You know, These are what I presented, and I apologize, I was on a flight on the last, but you can see that I'm working and putting on my thinking cap. And I think at this level, that's what I'm trying to do is explore, as opposed to crystallize and say this is the direction that we need to take for this particular subcommittee. I've done further research, you know, and I submitted some things just for discussion points that I added in the email this morning. I'm not necessarily wanting to go and dive into those because of the time is critical and you have other steps that you want to cover. But I just want to put out, you know, Norway, Finland, Sweden, Estonia, Denmark are some of the world's largest per capita deployment of heat pumps. And I know there's people with different ideas, but the technology goes down to minus 13 Fahrenheit. And we're talking about a huge reduction in greenhouse gases and in costs to their consumers of heating. And I think that there's incentives already in Canada, going back to tailhook with the 0%. There are some provinces that are providing 0% loans in some provinces for the installation of heat pumps. And trust me, it isn't just Southeast Alaska. Their latitude is much further north, you know, like the Anchorage and Fairbanks areas of their provinces that heat pumps are successfully working. So I just want to throw that out there.
I'm getting installed in my home this fall, Beth. Yeah.
Well, there you go. And, you know, integrated resource planning. Believe it or not, we're one of the few states that does not require it of every utility. An integrated resource plan, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, is like a 5- and 10-year outlook of your transmission generation needs, your demand needs, and then it's a public process. So it isn't done in a incubated shell between a utility and a contractor. There's a lot of public input. And we have a lot of localized ideas and a lot of localized suggestions. And I think that there should be an incentive rather than maybe just a flat-ass-out requirement for utilities to develop integrated resource plans. And when I say an integrated resource plan, they can be expensive. So maybe there needs to be an integrated resource plan like a light beer or something that can be used for smaller rural utilities so they're not taxed with this onerous IRP. But, you know, we are in a world of beneficial electrification with electric vehicles, air source heat pumps, school buses are going to become electric like they have in Tok. We're seeing a lot of, Juno just submitted to Louis DeJoy, the U.S. Postmaster, to put in, you know, multi-million-dollar charging stations for the postal vehicles in Juneau. This is coming. And how that impacts the grids, how that impacts resources, how that impacts where we should get a new solar farm outside of a community to help do that. So I just throw out integrated resource plans is a great tool that I would just dare say Alaska is way behind on, and that may be not a forced deal onto utilities, but it's something that I think we ought to open up and have a good discussion on.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate all the effort you put into identifying these resources, and I'm looking forward to digging into the ones you sent this morning and appreciate the additions to the worksheet and this discussion today. I mean, we are the subcommittee here, so it's good to have your contribution and have that time for this conversation.
Let me just. Nils, if you could give me, I know I've talked
about 1.5 more minutes.
If I could give you just a second.
Yeah.
DOE in 2016 came out and did a study for how to help rural Alaska on its planning. I don't want to get into the weeds. I don't even want to get into the recommendations. I would just say for yours and other committee members, it's a great document. Some of those recommendations you'll say, oh, this is common sense. Some of you'll say this will be really difficult to implement. But DOE spent thousands of dollars on that research And I just wanted to bring it to the Incentives and Subsidies Committee's attention that that document and their recommendations are out there, and it might be something that we could find a couple nuggets out of their recommendations for discussion at some point in the future. Thanks.
Great, thanks. And maybe the MBI team can take a look at that and see if there are items we can pull in.
You have to do.
Thanks, Michael. I know we're running up on the hour. I just, Michael, you had mentioned the SED, so if there's one other thing we could fit in, it's just really quickly a review of that, and I'm just going to maybe steal the screen share if I left it. Can you see that? Did I steal that from you, Michael?
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
So this is the, out of the SEDs, affordable is only mentioned once in the entire, in this PowerPoint from the presentation to the symposium last week. Affordable energy is called the goal four. And so this is objective 4.6 is the one that they highlighted as applicable to this working group or this subcommittee. And the task force. I would just say, I mean, if you get a chance to look at these, I think the question that I have from each action item is how. That's probably, and it feels like that's what this subcommittee is kind of trying to tackle, right? In terms of incentive subsidies, what is the financial or funding mechanism that helps to achieve each of these action items identified within the SEDS or any of the recommendations that come out? Like, it's easy to say build natural gas infrastructure. It's easy to say install renewable energy systems. But what we're trying to get to is how and with what resource. And I don't know that that is so readily apparent. And some of these things don't achieve lower cost energy necessarily. So we have to be thinking about these are good things, and that, you know, the Energy Security Task Force is going to be looking at these. Our kind of role in this is thinking about, all right, so what's the mechanism that helps the state achieve this action through financing, incentives, subsidies, and so on. So if you haven't had a chance to look at that, maybe take a look. And none of these are necessarily new either, right? Like, we've been talking about these for a long time. Is it a fund? Is it a revolving loan capital, you know, what is the thing that, you know, helps with that? Is it a tax credit or incentive? I don't know. And I'm not trying to, I mean, these are important things that have been identified within the SEDS that we can kind of follow on and be consistent with. But I think it's much more challenging to figure out how to pay for them than say, let's build renewable energy. Isaac, we talked earlier about maybe getting private capital folks in. Is that a good next step, or is there anything else you would want to add right now before we get going? And then, Michael, you've got some thoughts, too, about other things we need to achieve in the near future.
Yes, for my piece, we should just touch base offline on scheduling and when the best time. But yeah, I can take that as an action item.
And we're planning on meeting every Monday, so we'll be back next Monday and figure out what we want to talk about there.
Yeah, I'm just staring at our deadline here a little bit and recognize that we have some work yet to do if we're going to produce a final report. So maybe we actually need a separate time for someone to come and present, aside from our Monday meetings. I hate to add more meetings, but just looking at, you know, what we have to do.
Yeah.
And then, Niels, is it okay if I share my screen really quick?
Yeah.
I just wanted to highlight this. There were some other actions in the plan as well, and says, and here's one, conduct a study on state-level energy incentive programs across the U.S. They had a two-year timeline on this, and they identified partners, AEA and then Launch Alaska. So I just wanted to note that if that's something we also just want to carry through as an action. And I'll leave it there. We don't have to discuss it.
There were other things that were in the status. It was just the only things that fell under affordable energy were those items. So lots of other things in there.
And then the other thing that we've mentioned, some of these, the federal actions highlighting that for statutes and regs, that subcommittee is meeting tomorrow and the 5th. I'm happy to kind of help coordinate bringing that to their attention, if you'd like. And then I know there was some cross-pollination on the issue of postage stamp rate and tiered rates versus PCE. And we probably don't have time to get into that topic, but that's probably worthy of a discussion as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we can go through, I don't know that I'll have time today to go through the actions worksheet and pull out here's things that we could send to that group. But if you want to do a quick review and draft, we can take a look and send it their way.
Okay.
I do think, yeah, the postage stamp rate is probably a bigger conversation. And I did bring it up with the rural subcommittee too, who got maybe excited about it. But depending on where you live in the state, you might be. we'll confer kind of offline, kind of figure out what next week looks like and what our timeline is for moving forward on some of these things.
Yeah, Nils, I'd just add, I don't want to suck up more time, with outside input, but I did contact the European Heat Pump Association and they, the data that I gave you was from a 3,000 euro report that they don't release. They're more than willing to help with policy decisions with Alaska. I contacted their people. They said we'd be willing to help. They gave me the report. They just said don't distribute it. So I cut out pieces that I thought were useful. The other organization, RAP, is also available. And I would share that I'm not on the rural committee, but that document I sent out is recommendations specifically for rural Alaska. Again, I'm just helping pool resources in if we need them. I don't want to tax our time with people that we shouldn't listen to, but I'm just trying to develop a network of those that wish to assist us in our mission.
Cool. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Jeff, just to clarify, any documents that we get, I guess, can you flag the one that shouldn't be posted?
The Excel spreadsheet we can post. I haven't distributed the EHPA 22 market data and statistics because they asked me not to distribute that. I'm allowed to share it for policymakers, is what they said.
Okay.
And they also said that they would be willing to engage, whether it's at Andrew's level or governor's office. They're willing to work with any committee. You know, we'd have to make arrangements, but if that's something any committee desires.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. All right. Thanks, everybody. We will see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Great meeting.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff.
Cheers, guys. Bye now.